following podcast is hashtag Boone approved. It's time for another edition of the Brett Boone Podcast.
Remember when me and you almost went to blows? Lou sent me down three times too, so I know what you're talking about.
With your host, MLB All-Star, Brett Boone.
Bottom line is, you will become a successful major league hitter by hitting pitchers' mistakes.
As he sits down with his sports and entertainment friends from around the world.
You are not going to be a successful major league hitter if you hit pitchers' pitches.
This isn't just any former jocks podcast.
To change the outcome, you got to change the income. You got to change what goes in. Then that changes what goes out.
Often duplicated, but never replicated. Just like his bat flip.
Okay, now the party starts. The responsibility starts now.
Now in its fourth year, this is the one and only Brett Boone Podcast.
Welcome to the Brett Boone Podcast. I am Brett Boone. Today on the program, we got a friend of the program coming back. Wow, he's been in the thick of it in New York. Mets, Yankees run postseason. MLB insider. Welcome, SNY, Andy Martino. Andy, thanks for coming on.
Brett, my pleasure. Just looking forward to game three here, coming off of the plane for the first two. Not like the Yankees had wanted them to go, but we'll see how it goes in New York.
You've been busy, huh?
It's been quite a month.
Mets, obviously we're going to talk about the Yankees and the World Series, but Mets, they really surprised me. They were much more resilient than I gave them credit for being.
It was amazing. It was a really magical thing to watch. I don't say that lightly. That's an easy thing that gets tossed around, but Aaron's former bench coach, Carlos Mendoza, was immediately such a great leader of men and in-game tactician that really, I think, drove a lot of the Mets went from being a lovable loser Mets to being a really serious franchise, like overnight. And that's when Carlos got there. I think that was a big part of it. And, you know, they're a good team. David Stearns and Billy Epler prior to him, sort of the way these things work, you know, Epler put together a lot of the roster. Stearns finished it off in his first year, and they had a pretty good team. Not as good as the Dodgers, and that's why the series went the way it went, but they had a special chemistry that was really legit. Future's bright because they have great leadership and obviously a lot of money coming from ownership. So yeah. It was a really wonderful month for the Mets. But the two best teams are in the World Series. It shook out the way that it should, I think. Right. And here we are.
Yeah, I agree with you, too, because so much is made of this new format. And fan-wise, I love the format. You know, it's a March Madness versus the playoffs. Mm-hmm. Now it's March Madness. But there's so many twists and turns, and you think this is going to happen, and it doesn't. But you're right. In the end, best record in the AL, best record in baseball overall are meeting in the World Series right now. All right, let's get to the World Series. You just got back from L.A., 2-0. Man, 2-0 Dodgers, tough. My kids were at the game. My mom was at the game. She came home. Mm-hmm. I said, "How you doing?" She goes, "Well, I'm okay." And mom's probably been to more of these showdowns than anyone in the history of the world. She's probably the most experienced out of anyone walking the earth right now, starting with dad through all of us. Obviously, the big question, everybody asks it. Game one, Nestor Cortez, that move against Ohtani. Hasn't pitched since September 18th. I'm sitting there as brother on the couch, as analyst, deciphering what's going on. I knew what Aaron was thinking, why he brought Nestor in that situation. Mm-hmm. Explain the blowback, what's going on right now. What did Aaron tell you? Because I haven't talked to him. I'm going to be honest with you. Before I shot this, I wasn't going to talk to him on purpose. I have not talked to Aaron since any of this happened. So,
That's interesting. It's a rare situation where I guess I've been more in touch with them than you have on this particular one. A couple things about it. First of all, I'm pretty sure he got crushed in New York for that. I was in LA. I was in the eye of the hurricane more. So I'm not the one to say like exactly how that played out on radio and back pages and all that. I wasn't with the team, but I know it was a controversial decision for me. That's a 50-50 call where you could see both sides and not worth ripping on someone for it. It's obviously a risk, and the legit criticism of it comes from the fact that Cortez hadn't pitched in more than 30 days. That's out there. And Aaron watched the live bullpens that Cortez threw and felt that he looked good, as did Matt Blake. And it's not just their eyes. You know, the Yankees set up every computer and camera ever invented to look at spin and everything else in these bullpen sessions. So all the indicators showed that Nestor was ready, or else he wouldn't have been in the roster and not in that spot. Now, having said that, he's not throwing when the base is loaded in a World Series when he's throwing live on sides. But Aaron knows that. I'm sure it accounts for the difference of it. If you look at the inning, so the reason I didn't have a problem when Nestor came out of the bullpen is pretty simple. You don't need high-speed cameras to tell you that Ohtani was 2-for-12 in his career against Nestor. So, okay, you like that matchup. Aaron said so Tim Hill, you put him in there maybe to get a ground ball. And Ohtani's foot speed, you don't love the chances of doubling him up. So that's a legit thing that Aaron said, right? A thoughtful method behind it. I talked to some scouts who were like, yeah, but Hill comes with that different angle, tougher on a lefty. So those are the two different ways to look at it. We understand Aaron's perspective on that. And Nestor is a starting pitcher. You probably like him better against Betts coming up after Ohtani. So he gets Ohtani in the pop-up. Then he's really unlucky that the runners advance after Verdugo falls into the stands, right? So now you have to walk. You don't have to, but it makes sense to walk Mookie at that point. So you lose the matchup of Nestor versus Mookie at that point. And then, you know, Nestor leaves a pitch a little out over the plate. And we know what happened with Freeman. So it played out in like the worst possible way in a number of ways. But that doesn't mean that there wasn't reasoning behind it. What I thought, Brett, was interesting was that when he was asked the next day if he had any regrets, Aaron said he doubled down on the Nestor one. He doubled down on taking Cole out early, which I also support because he knows more about how Cole's feeling than we do and what Cole says and all that. He said if he had one thing that he didn't use the word regret, but one thing that he thought about, and I think this is a really good point by him and his second guessing himself, was not leaving Weaver out to start the 10th. Remember, they had the lead. Weaver, he said it was three ups. Weaver hadn't done it before. And if you give him three ups, he's down for several days. But the counterpoint to that is, but you won game one probably if you send him out and you only need to win four. So I think that's the spot right there. Forget about Hill versus Cortez. Aaron himself said, I thought about Weaver just to leave him in. And so remember, he brought Cousins in and then to start the 10th and then Cortez after that.
Right. Okay. Right. What I'm.
I know that was a mouthful, but that's how it all played out.
Was that the game that Weaver got four outs?
He'd thrown 19 pitches across two ups, two innings. Right.
Right. So the layman argument to that is, he's a closer. You know, Mariano Rivera used to go two, but he was built for that. He did it all season long. There was a lot of criticism with the Class A thing in the postseason.
Yeah.
Well, all of a sudden, you go one inning all year, then all of a sudden in the postseason they ask you to go two. Mm-hmm. Oh, okay. Is that the right thing to do or not? I don't know. You can debate it all day. Weaver, though, different scenario. Weaver just recently has become a closer, so he's used to more of a workload. So Aaron's point is, hey, maybe I should have kept him in for longer. That makes sense. Here's my thoughts. He brings in Nestor in the big situation. Like you said, he's on the roster. If you're not ready to go in any situation on a World Series roster, what are you doing there? He calls on Nestor. Now, my antennas go up. Wow, interesting time for him to make his debut in the postseason right here. But, hey, he's Nestor. He looked pretty poised, looked ready to go. Got Ohtani out. That's a huge out. You automatically, from a matchup perspective, lefty-ready, you automatically walk Betts, especially mm-hmm. because the runner's advanced.
Right.
Now it comes to Freddie Freeman. Now, we all didn't think that was going to happen. That was a Kirk Gibson-esque moment. You can critique the move all you want. Me, I might have gone with Hill because mm-hmm. Hill's fresh. September 18th, last time, Nestor. A lot of guys might have gone with Hill. But Nestor, it's not like Aaron Boone came out of the woodwork and thought, Nestor. No, that's going between his coaches, his pitching coaches, the guy in the bullpen. This has been talked about. This wasn't just willy-nilly Nestor.
Yeah.
And that's what makes me laugh about the critique. This is something that was calculated. You can debate it all you want. If he gets Freeman out, oh, it's a genius move. He doesn't. You got to wear it a little bit. I understand that. Freddie Freeman, one of the best hitters in the world. He's one of the best hitters in the world, probably top five currently. And I said, how did he hit the home run? That ball was close to him. And I heard in the postseason, it's exactly the way I thought as a hitter, the second half of my career. And Freeman said, you know what? As soon as I saw Aaron put four for Betts, my mind starts calculating my approach for this at bat. And what he said was, Nestor's going to throw me cutters away. I don't want to go there. He said, I want to look for something hard and something close to me. What was the pitch? It was a well-located pitch. It wasn't a fat pitch out of a plate. It was on the corner.
Yeah.
If you got the best hitter in the world looking for something hard and close to you, and you paint a fastball in, some of the best hitters in the world will hit those in the seats where they did. Now, I felt horrible. I mean, that is a gut punch. You know, I felt horrible as a brother. But at the same time, this is the big leagues. This is the World Series. And this happens. And it sucks for you. But, hey, we got to find a way and come out and get a win tomorrow. Didn't do that. All right. Anyway, I've gone long-winded too. That was just my thought.
There's a lot to unpack on this one, isn't there?
I love it because I think you're right, though, with Aaron thinking Nestor Cortez is a starter. I like his chances. If it's Hill, if it's one batter to get out, maybe Aaron goes to Hill. You're right. But he was thinking long-term. No, Betts and Freeman, I'd rather Nestor go have some length from Nestor. And I knew that's what he was thoughts. And you know what? And it backfired on him and whatever. You're going to live to play another day. Let's see what we do tonight. Anyway.
Yeah.
All right. What did I have for you other than that?
There's a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
It's a jam-packed two games. I mean, there's that decision. There's Judge. There's so much going on, Brett.
There is. The Yankees starting pitching, I thought for me, when breaking down this series, I said, if the Yankees have an edge in this series, I think it's starting pitching. They've got Gerrit Cole, and they don't have – someone on the other side right now healthy that can counter Gerrit Cole. Gerrit Cole pitched great opening day. Flaherty, got to tip my cap to him. I saw him pitch the start before.
Yeah.
He looked awful, as bad as you can. And I said, how after that performance can he start game one? Well, it just shows you Doc Roberts. He's on the ground. He's seeing things that we're not seeing. Flaherty was excellent. It was a battle. The Nestor scenario played out. They lose one. Hey, you lose some heartbreaker sometimes. Game two, Yamamoto, what are we going to get? Are we going to get that guy that closed out the San Diego Padres and was brilliant, or a guy that'll go two and a third and give up three? We got the San Diego closeout guy.
He sure did.
He pitched really good. So that's been the difference, is the starting pitching that was supposed to be an edge for the Yankees. Man, Dodgers have really come out and impressed. What are you thinking?
Yeah, obviously tough to lose the Cole game, even though it wasn't Cole who lost it. That hurts your advantage for the Yankees at that point. And then, you know, Carlos Rodon told me after the game that he had a blister for the first time this season. He downplayed. He wasn't excuse-making. I noticed he was looking at his hands. So I asked him. He didn't bring it up. But we know, obviously, from watching baseball that can affect a pitcher. So that takes some of the advantage away in that game. And now the Yankees get, I don't want to call Schmidt and Hill the softer part of the rotation. This guy's had terrific years and have good stuff, but losing the Cole and Rodon games obviously erases a lot of that advantage. I agree with you. And the thing with the Dodgers is, and I learned this when I went to cover the NLCS against the Mets, where I was at every game, the conversation external to the Dodgers is all the pitching that they're missing, particularly in the rotation, of course. But watching the Dodgers is, oh my God, look at all the pitching they have, particularly in the bullpen, of course.
Yeah.
But when you got, even with Evan Phillips out, now Vesey is back and Gratterall's back, and you wonder, well, how they're going to look. Well, they look good in games one and two. So you think that the Yankees have a pitching advantage, but the Dodgers can throw a new look at you every inning or two, I would imagine, as a hitter. Well, you tell me, but sure, to face Cole and Rodon, it's really, really hard. But to face Kopech and then Gratterall and then Vesia, like every different at bat, that's got to be borderline harder, right? Different looks all the time and great stuff.
Here's what I think about that. And I was listening to Smoltz, and he made a good point. And he said, two things happen with these bullpen games. And by the way, in the postseason, Dodgers bullpenning, you know, having a lot of bullpen games, been phenomenal. I mean, they got four shutouts in the postseason. Four.
Yeah.
It doesn't happen. Nine-inning shutouts, especially in today's game, mostly done with bullpen. One was done with a seven-inning good performance by Flaherty. Mm-hmm. He said it either it good happens or it can go really south. Because to have a bullpen game, you got to have seven or eight guys really all have good days at the same time. And if you got two guys that just off, you know, that's what I'm thinking. That being said, the Dodger bullpen is as formidable. You know, a lot of the talk in the postseason was San Diego Padres bullpen. They are great. Cleveland Indian bullpen. They are great and statistically number one. But this Dodger bullpen just keeps coming at you. You know, I think it's very good. And the Dodgers kind of have been on a roll since the middle of that Mets series. It's kind of been like, wow, they're good. They're deep. Yeah. Their lineup is long, especially with the way Kike is playing. Edmund is playing. I mean, you get them playing like that. You got a Will Smith. That's really an X-factor. A Teoscar Hernandez in that second. I mean, no disrespect when I say the secondary players, but we got Ohtani, Betts, Freeman. If your secondary players are Muncy, Teoscar, Will Smith, and then you got Kike and Edmonds doing what they're doing, it's like that's a long.
And on the flip side of that, you've got Wells, Chisholm, Verdugo, guys like that, not necessarily hot. So there's a difference. Yeah,
I think going forward, and I've seen some glimpses of it in the last few games with Chisholm having some good at bat. Mm-hmm. Man, he's a big factor with his legs. He gets on base. He's a big factor. He can change a game, but you got to get on base and consistently. But I've been encouraged with his ABs the last two games. I think they've been better. Yeah. He's going to be a big part of it. All right. For being on the ground up there, how's that clubhouse after game two? I've been in some clubhouses down two. They're usually not the best. Was it as dismal or was upbeat a little bit? Like, hey,
it was fine. I would say fine. I wouldn't say upbeat, but I would definitely not say dismal or crushed or anything like that. It was kind of normal. And that's the kind of thing I know, like, fans watching at home were really frustrated. I want probably to see the guys be like, oh, he's so down. But but Aaron was saying he liked what he saw. So even coming in the moments after game one, he's like, I like what I saw. Everyone still had that good look in their eye. And after game two, you know, I spent couple minutes one-on-one with Judge, a couple minutes with Rodon, talked to Cole briefly, you know, checked in with like the big guys, and they're fine. Like, they know Judge was good in terms of being accountable and saying, I got to get going. He's not in denial. None of the guys are, but they're good. They know they're good. They know the Dodgers are really good. They know it's not over. And it was a normal room, like a professional normal room getting on that plane. That's what I saw.
I'll tell you, Judge is a pro. The more I watch him, I'm really impressed with obviously his numbers and what he's capable of doing on the field. But his demeanor, I mean, he really, that Yankee, man, that Yankee organization has not missed a beat when it goes on to passing the baton on from a Derek Jeter to an Aaron Judge. Really.
For sure.
As seamless as it could be. I mean, in the toughest of times, he just stands up there and says, hey, it's going to be okay. When I know, you know, I've been in some slumps like him where inside, that's not what you're thinking. You got things going all over the place, but man, is he's cool.
And he is. And it wasn't just,
I'm impressed with it.
Yeah. It wasn't just the scrums. You're right. He stood up there, took all the questions, said the right things. And you know, like in the World Series, there's so much media. It's like wave after wave of the same questions. Sure. He dealt with it. And then myself and a few of the other reporters who are around a lot, who know him a bit, talking to him one-on-one, like he was not in a hurry to get out of there. He understands that's his job as the captain to stand up there and do it. And they all, the Yankees don't have any guys to duck it this year. It's a good culture that way. I put that on Judge. I put that on Aaron. It's an accountable. They're not the most open group of people from a media perspective. Like, you're not going to have a heart-to-heart every day with a lot of these guys, but they're professional, accountable, available in moments like these, which you give him credit for.
Yeah, and it's important on a team where, you know, there's a lot of the mans, but Judge is the man. And when you see your captain who's having a tough time, handle it the way he does, it makes everybody say, you know what, it's going to be all right. If he's all right, what I'm watching him go through right now,
then we're going to be all right. It's like being the turbulence on the plane. You're looking at that flight attendant. She okay? Okay. If she's okay, I'm okay. When she's not okay, buckle up. We're in trouble. But
that's a good analogy. And he is okay. And he didn't lie either. I actually asked him, like, look, you're a human being. Are you pressing or anxious or anything? And he didn't say, like, no, I'm good. He was like, well, I need to step it up. He's pretty open for a guy in his position. But like you said, Brett, the key is like his vibe, his tone, his body language was like, no, it's okay. I mean, I know I'm not good, but we're okay. And that's a great point that people are, I'm sure, looking to him for that. So, yeah.
Yeah, because if your captain crumbles, well, how the heck are the rest of us going to do it? Aaron's going to fall to this. So it's good to see that. Dodger Stadium, it looked pretty awesome. Stars are coming out. You know what I thought was really cool, and I just noticed a game two, because I know it happened recently. Fernando Valenzuela passing away. When Ice Cube was doing his rap coming in, just as he passed the mound, I saw the 34 on there for Fernando. Yeah. I thought that was cool. How was the entertainment side of World Series game one or two for you in L.A.?
They did a great job. They really did. Obviously, it's one of the most beautiful, if not most beautiful, environments for baseball, and it played up. The Fernando stuff was tasteful. You know, the sign on the way in at the gate with Vin Scully Drive and all that had, you probably saw the images of the Fernando Memorial, like people leaving flowers and people hanging out. And that was like totally an organic thing, I think, that happened where just regular old members of the fan base were honoring him. And that was a nice way to enter the ballpark. They had like a Mexican band in the bleachers before game one, which was cool and tastefully done tribute, I think. And the whole thing with Fernando was well done. And then, it was excited, loud, everything you'd want. You know, you get off the elevator downstairs in the basement after the Freeman home run and Magic Johnson and Fleer hugging, like all the things you'd expect to see at Dodger Stadium, right? Yeah. So, it was good. They did a nice job. It was the way Dodger Stadium should play when it's a huge game. And I'm sure Yankee Stadium will show up in its own cold Northeastern energy kind of way tonight. So it had the building had the feel that you'd want out of a Yankees Dodgers World Series.
Yeah. Very. It's, I love Dodger Stadium. It's an iconic stadium.
Me too.
I love the Bronx. Well, I have to admit, I like the Bronx more as far as a player's perspective going in. Where do I want to go play? I want to go play in the Bronx.
That's tough to beat there for sure.
The atmosphere is unbelievable. We had the live stream the other night on the Boone podcast live stream during the game. And I had Chipper and Piazza on, and we talked about postseason in the Bronx is not like postseason in Dodger Stadium. Dodger Stadium, the lights are bright. The birds are chirping. It's warm. You got short sleeve shirts on. It's almost like a spring training game.
Yeah. And it's at 5 o'clock, which impacts it too. Right.
And the only thing about the 5 o'clock is the shadows, and sometimes the hitter, you can't
plus
see
just it. It's cool, but a World Series in the daylight just is different feel, right? It's like a little bit less.
It's not as scary.
Yeah.
Let me tell you, the Bronx, especially when it's crisp, and man, I've had some neck gaiters on and some long sleeves. Yeah, sure. It seems like that sky is so dark. And it can almost be spooky. It's going to be a different atmosphere than Dodger Stadium coming home to the Bronx. You expect them to come out, those Yankee fans come out and be just as loud in a different way than LA.
Yeah. Yeah. And less foul territory, more on top of you, all that stuff. And you're right. I'm just looking at my weather app here, like 49 degrees at 8 o'clock, first pitch. So
I know those games.
Yeah, exactly. So it's got all those elements of the Bronx postseason that you were describing there, and then the guys you had on described. So I think it'll be great. I think only if it's diminished because they're coming home down 2-0, only slightly. It's still the first World Series game in the Bronx in 15 years. I know fans are excited. They're able to tell themselves, hey, we came back against the Braves down 2-0 in 96. And there was I believe they were down 2-0 in 78. And the Dodgers. So they can tell them, the fans can tell themselves that as they file in and cheer the introductions and everything. I'm sure it'll be great.
Well, you win tonight, you're right back in it.
100%.
You know how history goes. You win tonight, you're right back in. You lose tonight, the percentages are not on your side.
Yeah.
A few cleaning up items for you. Stuff that you're here hasn't been discussed at all. Any chance Cole would go on 3 days rest?
I asked a few people. It became a legit question going down 2-0. Hey, if you're facing elimination, is there any chance? And I got not like a hard no, like no way, no how, but pretty firm indication that that was not on the table. Like, I can tell you this, it hasn't been thought of or discussed to the point where he is prepared for it at all. And we know a starter's routine. He might do something a little different with his throw day or something. If he's thinking about going on short rest, he's done it once in his career. It was in 2020 in the division series. He pitched pretty well. He was 5 years younger almost then. And he did have an elbow issue this year. So I wouldn't hold your breath for that. That's what I was told, was it hasn't been discussed, which, like you said, it's not a hard no, but it's not a, certainly doesn't sound likely.
Yeah. This postseason, I throw the word resiliency out quite a bit because Dodgers have been resilient. Your Mets as resilient as anybody,
yeah.
almost like the Diamondbacks of a year ago. That's what I was thinking with that Mets team.
Yeah.
But because the Yankees are the Yankees, and everybody likes to come and bash them, it just seems that's the way it is from my end when I watch. They've been pretty damn resilient too. Mm-hmm. It hasn't been all peaches and cream for them all year. Aaron Judge, for example, April, Aaron Judge was awful for his standards. He had one of the greatest years of all time.
And
this guy, this is what he's capable of. If he just finds it, and I can see he's in between, he's confused. The fastball's by him. He's swinging over top of the breaking ball. As hitters, believe me, it's not a good feeling, but you just kind of, eventually it's, finally, it'll click, but it can't just click when you want to. If it could, he would be doing it right now. This is going to be a good. We got Bueller, Schmidt tonight.
Yeah,
Schmidt's been good so far. I mean, he's solid in the postseason. I like the look of Schmidt. I like the way he's grown up in the last 3 years. 3 years ago, I watched him and I remember thinking, I don't think he's a big league middle of the rotation guy. I don't think he's good enough. I think he's too predictable. He's changed my mind quite a bit. I told Aaron this year, I said, Schmidt has changed my mind. He's a good pitcher. He's tough.
And he's, you said predictable. What changed primarily, Brett? Was it the sequencing or was it just the quality of all his stuff?
I think it's a combination of both, but I think it's the sequencing. I used to sit there because I watch everybody. If I was hitting right now, sometimes I think, man, I'm glad I'm not hitting right now. Sometimes I think I could get a hit. But I just see how predictable, how many pitches I can tell you what's coming. And I don't look at the catcher and what the catcher's putting down or where he's setting up. I'm just going, this is common sense right now. Let's see if they're as dumb as I think they are. And bam. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I could call every single pitch. When it becomes, that's all hitting is about. It is eliminating a pitch, making what's coming predictable. That's the only time hitting's easy. And you still, even if you get the pitch, you can't miss it. But I just thought he was predictable. I think he's not predictable anymore. Mm-hmm. And there's just something about him that's changed. And it's good to see. I got confidence in him tonight as a Yankee fan against Walker Bueller. We'll see. You know, Walker Bueller pitched 4 innings last time out, gave up no runs, but he's not the Walker Bueller of 2021. Coming off that Tommy John, maybe he needs an offseason to be the old Walker Bueller.
Yeah.
Also, when your team goes up 2-0, that's a little adrenaline for you to maybe take them out and have a good outing. It's going to be interesting, but we're back in the Bronx. What does SNY have coming up? You got any big shows, or what are you covering?
We're out there pregame. If you're in New York, we have a show called Baseball Night in New York every night. I'll be live from the field. We'll be live after. So just in writing on our website, obviously covering the news and writing columns. So we've got the thing well covered, as do you, Brett. Thanks for asking.
Very cool. I appreciate Andy stopping by and giving us a little insight. You're going to see Aaron today?
I'm going to see Aaron today. You know him. He's in a little bit of a mood. Like, he's, you know, we get along, but something happened in like September. He locks in when he can smell it. I talked, maybe I shouldn't say this on the air, but like even Adam Katz, we're both longtime friend and agent, was like, yeah, maybe this is like late September. He's like, yeah, Aaron's a little cranky right now. Like, we try to talk about anything, and not in a bad way, just in like, You see him in July, you shoot the breeze for a while. You see him right now. He's got the blinders on, as he should. So I'll see him. But I will say I talked to you, and I'll say the last time I was on with you, I said, hey, guess who interviewed me today? He said, Short Boone. So we might have that conversation there.
Go walk into the room, give him a hug, and say, hey, Uncle Brett wanted to give you a hug today. That'll lighten it up. That'll make him unable to lock in. So
I tell you, if the local media thinks I'm too kind to him now, if they see me give him a hug in the middle of the clubhouse, that'll be the end of me. But I'll tell him you said that.
You got it. All right, man. Thanks. Good luck.
Thanks, Brett.
Man, for the first time all year, I've got to be a Yankee fan for real right now. I'm pulling for him. I appreciate it. For all you watching the Brett Boone Podcast now on our own YouTube channel, appreciate you checking it out. For those of you listening on the Odyssey app or wherever you download your podcast, until next time, keep it here. Thanks, Andy.